Dislike the thought of your address, phone number, and your family's information being sold online? Imagine having your own private detective who scours the internet for data brokers selling your personal info. When they find it in the wrong hands, they help you take it back. McAfee Plus is just like that, a private detective helping you take control of your data and privacy. Get all-in-one protection with McAfee Plus and learn how to protect your everything at McAfee.com/podcast.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This episode is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Sharealike 4.0 international license. For more information, visit creativecommons.org. I'm Sophia.
And I'm Gabriel.
And this is a Breaking Math Problem episode. Before we go into exactly what it is, we're just going to do our plugs really quick. At Patreon, you can support us monthly. It really helps us out. If you pay just $1 or more, you can have the outlines and you can have the episodes with no ads. And if you pay $22.46, you can get the Tensor poster with Tensor Calculus stuff on it. It has some cool diagrams. Everything looks kind of sci-fi. And tensors are used in general relativity. If you just want to buy the poster itself, it's $19.65, which is $15.15 plus $4.50 shipping and handling. At facebook.com/breakingmathpodcast, just click on shop. You can also find updates about the show there. We're on Twitter at Breaking Math Pod. Our website is breakingmathpodcast.app. Updates coming soon. If you want to email us ideas, comments, questions, or corrections, you can email us at breakingmathpodcast@gmail.com.
We also have a sister podcast we would like to promote on this show called the Turing Rabbit Holes Podcast, named after Alan Turing. You can find that at youtube.com/Turing Rabbit Holes Podcast. We need to stop naming things podcasts. That's you know, a given. The show is starring a guest who's on the Breaking Math Podcast with some frequency, named Dr. Alan Alanese, and myself, actually. And we talk about physics and math as well from his perspective and his history, which is it's a cool show.
So the thing that started us onto this is, I mean, we've been talking about circles and continuities for like the last few weeks and whatever. But Gabriel, you wanted to just talk about the Socratic seminars again, and like how they led to the question for this episode, which is a kind of nebulous question. How many angles are there in a circle? Do you want to go ahead and explain that?
Absolutely. So this is actually a pivotal moment in both my understanding of mathematics, but also my teaching philosophy. I had mentioned this in the previous episode, so if you listen to that one, then you're a little bit familiar already. I'm going to go into a little bit more detail now. I'm excited to discuss this question specifically because it came from a very formative time in my life as a math teacher. As you may recall from our previous episode, I was once a math teacher at a small charter school here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, called Cottonwood Classical Preparatory School. This school had a requirement as part of its charter that every single subject would participate in something called Socratic seminars. That is, student-led, open-ended discussions in all the classes that are about a philosophical topic or an idea, and it's not graded on correctness so much as it is on participation. Now, we even had them in math and science classes, and I thought that that was quite neat.
I find that interesting too, because a lot of times math is presented as the set of rules they have to follow. Like, you know, you have the quadratic formula that you memorize, yes, and all this other, like, honestly, like, debilitating math practice, and I find that very interesting.
You're exactly right. Anytime I think of math in any typical classroom, it's exactly what you said. You've got a math textbook with problems, and you solve it with the formula the teacher gives you.
Which is like paint by numbers to art, which is not an example I thought of.
Exactly. But. So in a math class, every couple of weeks or so, we would move all the desks aside and set up all the chairs so they're facing each other, and there would be a discussion just based on, you know, a philosophical idea. I thought this was brilliant, and I specifically wanted to mention this experience on this podcast because I'd love it for this practice to be adopted throughout. In fact, if anybody has questions about it, feel free to send them to me, you know, at breakingmathpodcast@gmail.com, and I'll tell you a bit more about this practice of Socratic seminars. Now, during one Socratic seminar in this math class, we were discussing infinity. I don't quite recall what the specific question was that started the conversation, but at one point, the question was asked, do circles have zero angles, or do they have an infinite amount of angles? The students were allowed to think about it and then discuss it following, you know, some basic rules of discussion. I found this question fascinating. And again, I don't even remember where it came from. It was brought up in the natural flow of this conversation. Now, I do want to specify that by angles, we can also call it points as well. Of course, a point would be where two lines intersect at any, you know, degree.
Well, and I think what, like specifically, definitely what you mean is like, because an angle is between three points, or like kind of like the intersection between two lines, right?
Correct.
And a point is just where they intersect. So you could see every point on the circle as having an angle because there's a line going into and out of that.
Yeah. Now, what was cool is again, this conversation was with middle school students, and we're not grading for mathematical rigor or even necessarily correctness. We're just grading on participation. The discussion followed like so. You can start off with a single point, and then you can add another point with which you can make a line between the two points. You can add a third point, and you would get a triangle. A fourth point would create a square, and you can keep adding points in this general shape. And again, I realize we discussed this on previous episodes, but it's worth bringing up again. You can, you know, add 8 points and create an octagon. Essentially, you can add n points and create an n-sided shape. That essentially approaches a circle. So the argument could be made that a circle has infinite angles, infinite points.
Yeah, and of course, like every point can be said to have an angle. And we also had the discussion last time on the episode. We were going to go into more detail. And you said you had in the Socratic seminar as well.
Yes.
The idea of an infinitely large circle being a straight line.
Yes. So again, just, you know, as long as students are talking about infinity and ways to I don't want to say measure it, but grasp it, at least conversationally, you know, the students had said, so as, you know, as you start with a circle, and if you increase the radii, it appears to come apart, so to speak. Well, you know, if you stand on the earth, it may appear flat. We know that it's curved, but it certainly appears flat. So from a given, you know, from a given vantage point, if you increase the size of a circle, in the process of increasing the size, it appears to, perhaps it could appear to get flat. The question was asked, if you increase a circle so that the radius is an infinite length, do you have a flat line or not? Discuss. And again, in the spirit of a Socratic seminar, we're not necessarily concerned, at least right away, with rigorous mathematical definitions, but more or less the process of how you get there. And I thought that was a brilliant, brilliant question. It took me a very long time to arrive at what I believe is the right answer. But I say this more as an approach for learning, and a hope that, you know, some other teachers might adopt Socratic seminars even in math classes.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a good thing to encourage this kind of open-ended discussion. And it also keeps the teacher on their toes, and as a teacher should be. If a teacher of yours, a professor of yours, anyone like that, if they can't deal with you asking questions or you pointing out things that you think are wrong, then they are not good at their job. Just as simple as that. Like,
yes.
And most of the people in the audience, most of their teachers are probably bad teachers, in my experience. And it's because of this fear. So in that spirit, but also in that spirit, and also the spirit of Breaking Math Problem Episode Rigor, we're going to go into these questions. 2020 was full of these really unique challenges that made us change our whole way of life. Everybody had to do things differently, find new ways to work, but every time we had a challenge, we learned to survive and thrive and strive to be better. And 2021's a new year, we don't know what it's going to bring, but there's so many things on our partner, The Great Courses Plus. But with The Great Courses Plus this year, you could definitely make it your year by continuing to learn with purpose. Because, you know, when you learn with purpose, you can be better, you can do better. I mean, there's courses on everything, not just science stuff. There's how to manage your online account. There's financial plans, how to own a house. But today we're going to talk about the course Mindbending Math, Riddles and Paradoxes. And if you like this episode, in these last couple of episodes, you're definitely going to like this because it even has some of the infinity things that we talked about on there. They talked about Cantor's proof that the probability that a number randomly selected as a fraction is zero. A lot of cool stuff. It can help make you a better thinker. And if you listen to our show, I know you do want to be a better thinker. So whether you want to take a deep dive into a subject or learn like a little bit of everything, the Great Courses Plus has something for everyone. They have an app, the Great Courses Plus app, to watch or listen to lectures on any device, anytime, anywhere. So what is your purpose this year? What new things will you learn? I think you want to sign up for the Great Courses Plus and find out. We've been loving having it. We've been definitely diving into it. And if you visit our special URL, thegreatcoursesplus.com/breakingmath, you'll get an entire month of unlimited access for free. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/breakingmath. And you don't want to pass this up. It's a limited time offer. And one more time, that's thegreatcoursesplus.com/breakingmath.
Hey, Breaking Math fans. First, I want to thank you for listening. I have an important message for everyone. You can start your own podcast right now with Anchor. Anchor lets you create and distribute your own podcast. Just get an idea, record, and upload. It's just that easy. Anyone can do it. I'm on my way to accomplishing my dream, and you can too. Just get on your device's app store and download Anchor. It contains everything you need to make a podcast. With Anchor, you can put your podcast on all the big platforms. Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Podcast, Amazon, and more. Reach the whole world with Anchor. Best of all, Anchor is free. You have nothing to lose with a free platform. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Now, without further ado, we will attempt to answer both of these questions with a bit more rigor than what happened during the Socratic seminar.
So, we talked about on the last episode that there's this cardinality, meaning like this amount called LF1, and it's the amount of real numbers that there are, right? 1.3, pi, anything that you could think of that's a number. Mm-hmm. The number of the cardinality of those is LF1.
Correct.
And LF1 is uncountable, right? Mm-hmm. Meaning that like LF0 is like all the natural numbers or all the squares. Go back to last episode if you want more information on that. Mm-hmm. But you cannot count, you cannot put all the points in a plane or a line or a cube in order. You will leave some out every time.
Yes.
In fact, you'll leave out literally 99.9999 infinite number of nines percent of them. Basically, only 1 over infinity of the points is what you'll get if you have a countable number of points.
Yes. And again, what you're saying is, so if you draw a straight line, there are an uncountable amount of points in that line. And you can also take that straight line and bend it into a perfect circle.
Yeah.
Mathematically. And the same thing would apply because a perfect circle can be made simply by a straight line.
Yeah. And because the line segment also has the same number of points as the whole real line, right?
Yes. So that should be in of itself sufficient to mathematically prove that a circle has an uncountable amount of points.
Yeah. Because for every point in a circle, there's a point on some line, and we could stretch that line out from negative infinity to infinity in a rigorous way using a inverse sigmoid function. Like arctangent or various means.
Yes.
And yeah.
We will now discuss a little bit about the differences and similarities between an angle and a point on the circumference of a circle.
So obviously the points on the circumference of the circle are just the points that make up that circumference, right?
Correct.
And there's LF1 of those.
Yes.
But so you could say that each point on the circle, right, if we zoom in far enough, it's going to have some angle, right? Because let's go back to the triangle square thing, right?
Yes.
The triangle has angles of 60 degrees if they're all equal, right?
Yes, an equilateral triangle, correct.
Yeah, and if it's a four-sided figure, then everything has 90 degrees.
Assuming that, well, yeah, unless you've got a rhombus, but...
But I'm just saying like equidistant points, so that like all points are equidistant from each other and all equidistant from some center point. And mm-hmm. That's how we could define things that approach a circle without using the concept of a circle.
Yes.
And if you keep moving, you notice that these numbers will get bigger and bigger, but there's a point, there is something that they are approaching. Mm-hmm. And that is 180 degrees, which is just a straight line, two right angles.
Correct.
And so you might think like, oh, how can this be? How can we go all the way to infinity? And the thing is, all we have to do is use the definition of a circle, which is continuous itself, right?
Yes.
And this was actually proven by Euclid like 2,500 years ago or whatever. Mm-hmm. So let's imagine that you have a circle, right? Imagine a circle in front of you and there's a line resting on top of the circle, right?
Yes.
So it looks like a wheel rolling on like a drawing of a road or something like that.
Sure. Absolutely. Just so any circle that comes into contact with a straight line.
And at exactly one point.
Yes.
So there's no chords within the line, anything like that.
Okay. So a perfectly straight line touching a perfectly round circle, and it doesn't go through it. It touches it at one point.
Yeah. And touching it at one point means it's tangent to that line.
Correct.
Now, let's say we draw a line from the center of the circle to the point that the line meets the circle, right? That one point that it touches.
Yes.
That will be the radius of the circle, right?
Correct.
And that's just by the definition of a radius. A circle is a point in a radius.
Yes.
And the radius touches the edge from the center. Mm-hmm. So what is the angle between the radius and the tangent line?
So just those two is, you know, it's two 90 degree angles or a single 180 degree angle.
Yeah, and 180 degrees total with like 90 degrees on each side, right?
Correct.
So it like meets it at a perfect L.
Perfect perpendicular. Yeah, this is like, you know, high school or even, you know, elementary geometry.
What's interesting, though, is that it's something that needs to be proven within Euclid's system. There's mm-hmm. not enough. It's something that we actually have to prove rigorously. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do that now. But instead of imagining this abstract circle, because we're going to get a little bit complicated, we're going to make it a little bit simpler by making it physical for you. So imagine you have a plate, right?
Yes.
On a table. It's a round plate. Mm-hmm. And you get a ruler and you touch it to the edge of the plate. So it just like... So the line on the edge of the ruler is tangent to the circle that's on the edge of the plate, right? Mm-hmm. So let's suppose, though, that... So if I draw a line from like the center of the circle to the ruler and then draw the line along the ruler, it's going to be a 90 degree angle. That's what we claim, right?
Correct.
So we're going to do a proof by contradiction, and we're going to assume the opposite.
Okay.
We're going to assume that it is not a 90 degree angle. So we're going to assume that there's some point... let's just say that it's to the right on the ruler. Mm-hmm. So like you just go down the ruler a little bit outside of where it's touching the plate. And, at this point, let's suppose that is the 90 degree angle.
Yes.
And if it were on the left, you just have to flip the scene around, do it in a mirror. So that means that if we made a triangle going from the center of the plate to the point that we're claiming it's a right angle, right? On the ruler.
Yes.
Let's just say we mark that with a red dot. Okay. So to the red dot and to the point where the plate meets the circle and back, it would have a 90 degree. We're saying that it would have a 90 degree angle at that dot, right? At that on the ruler.
Okay.
So how many degrees are there in a triangle the interior angles?
180.
Yeah. And since we already used up 90 of those, the two angles that remain, which is again, the angle at the center of the circle, right? Mm-hmm. And the angle where the ruler touches the radius, we're saying that both of those must be less than 90 degrees, right?
Correct.
Because you have to split 90 degrees between two things. Mm-hmm. So in triangles, like one fact about triangles that we don't want to prove here, you could find plenty of wonderful proofs online, is that in a triangle, the angle that is the largest, the opposite side is also the longest of the sides. Mm-hmm. So does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Absolutely.
And so since it's the greatest angle, the opposite side is the line on our triangle that goes from the center of the circle, of the plate to the ruler, right? Mm-hmm. And we're saying that distance must be longer than the distance from the center of the circle to the point on a ruler outside of the circle. Mm-hmm. But since the distance to that point, right, the point, that red point, is longer than the radius because it contains the radius, right? Mm-hmm. It must be longer than the other piece. Mm-hmm. So we have a contradiction there.
I see. And that must mean that we've proven out what we've set to prove.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's kind of weird though, right? Because what we've proven here is that at every point in the circle, it seems to be a flat line. It seems to not be different than a flat line.
Correct.
Which seems a little bit weird. One might have the question, where did the angle go? How do we measure that?
Mm-hmm. However, essentially what we're saying is that for the purpose of a circle, every point on the circle is an angle.
And you could say it's an angle because you could imagine first that you draw two points next to the circle, right? Mm-hmm. And then you draw the angle and then you get the points closer and closer. So there really is this infinitesimal calculus aspect to a lot of Euclid's proofs, especially the ones dealing with circles where they kind of bypass that mm-hmm. with clever stuff.
Yes.
But
So what we're showing then is that this proof shows that earlier we accepted that a circle has an infinite amount of points. Again, through this more formal, rigorous proof, a circle also has an infinite amount of angles.
And all of those angles are a straight line.
Yes.
Which is weird.
It is weird.
So why is a circle not a straight line?
So now, so I love your transition. So since every angle on a circle is like a straight line, why is a circle not a straight line? This is the other part of the question from the Socratic seminar that was brought up, it's similar to it, and I think it's a wonderful lead-in to that second question. That question was, if you have a circle from a given point, from a given vantage point, and if you continuously increase the circle all the way to infinity, granted, you know, that's not actually possible, but if you were to increase the radius of a circle to infinity, would the circle be a straight line?
And we could examine that a little bit by looking at the idea of infinitesimal change as you go along paths. So let's imagine real quick that you're on a roller coaster, right?
Yes.
If you've been on a roller coaster or even in a car, you notice that when you take curves and stuff, you feel centrifugal force, right?
Correct.
Believe it or not, the centrifugal force is related to a concept called curvature, mm-hmm. which allows us to discuss what we're talking about.
Yes.
So let's do a quick review on velocity and acceleration. Gabriel, what does it mean to say that velocity is the time derivative of position?
So a derivative is a measure of change, essentially. So if velocity is the time derivative of position, it is the change in position over time, and it happens in infinitesimal increments.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of cool because if you keep going with this, and we've talked about this many times, but it bears repeating because it's a new episode, the acceleration is a time derivative of the velocity.
Correct.
So, and that means it's measured in like units of distance per time per time. So like an acceleration of 1 meter per second would mean that after 1 second is going 1 meter per second. After 2 seconds is going 2 meters per second and so on. Mm-hmm. So now that we got that out of the way, let's talk about arc length parametrization. So parametrization is you put in a time, like a variable like time, right? Mm-hmm. And you go along a path and it squiggles out a path. You have like some vector or some point generated at every point. So for a circle, it might take 2 pi of our units, depending on how we write it, and it would go along in a circle generating an x and a y coordinate at every point for time, right? Mm-hmm. But the arc length parametrization is assuming that we draw a curve in midair. Imagine a roller coaster where you're going the same speed the entire time.
Right.
Which would be the arc length parametrization of a curve. And we could use that to talk about curvature. So yeah, so arc length parametrization, let's just say we call that gamma of s, s being the distance.
Okay.
So if we follow the curve from gamma zero to gamma s, we'll have traveled how many units along that curve?
S units along that curve.
So now if we take the derivative over s, it's kind of like taking the derivative over time of a particle moving at a constant speed along that path, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that is like the velocity, and it's the first derivative of the arc length parametrization position.
Mm-hmm.
So if we call that gamma, the tangent vector, which is also the velocity, will be called T of S, which is gamma prime of S, prime meaning derivative. And it's something that you need to do with context. Yeah, so now the derivative of the velocity is acceleration, right?
Yes.
If we take the second derivative of our arc length parametrization, that is the velocity, that is the acceleration that we would feel along that point. So if we're in, basically this would be like if we were in space going along this path, how our stomachs would turn, basically, where gravity would feel like it's going.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the magnitude, and the curvature is the magnitude of that acceleration. Because remember, acceleration, let's say we're doing a circle, right?
Mm-hmm.
The acceleration would be pointing towards the center. It's the same reason why the moon orbits the Earth. The Earth is pulling on the moon and the moon is moving sideways.
Yes.
So the magnitude of the acceleration is of a arc length parametrization is the curvature.
Mm-hmm.
And what's cool about the curvature is it's inversely proportional to the radius. If you're drawing a circle, then it's like that, right? It's mm-hmm. inversely proportional to the radius. So if our radius is 3, our curvature is 1/3. If our radius is infinity, our curvature is what?
0.
Yeah, so in that way, we could imagine a straight line being a circle. And then, because one of my problems sometimes with defining a straight line as a circle, depending on what system, is in Euclidean geometry, it doesn't seem to make much sense, right?
Correct.
Because the radius would have to be infinity plus like 3 feet away, which doesn't make much sense.
Yes.
But with this thing, with the parameterization, you can basically freeze the velocity in time. And a circle in this system is a straight line if it's infinite.
This is so interesting. This is so interesting. So when we're talking about infinitesimals, like in this problem, a circle is necessarily a straight line at a certain point.
Yeah, it's the system that we work in, because we really have to be careful with that as mathematicians, because, I mean, a famous example is naive set theory was used in the late 1800s. And then somebody said, I can't remember who it was, what if you had the set of all sets that don't contain themselves, right?
Yes.
Would that set contain itself?
Oh, wow. There you go.
The answer is both yes and no. So that means that that naive set theory is bad. So if you're working in Euclidean geometry, a straight line cannot be a circle. If you're lurking on the surface of a sphere, every straight line is a circle.
Yes. Wow. Goodness. That's a head spinner.
Yeah, right.
Yes. Yes.
And this actually applies for every continuous function. So anything that doesn't jump or like change. So like, if I change directions infinitely abruptly, first of all, I would probably disintegrate because my acceleration would be infinite and I would turn into a cloud of light. But if I approach that, that is like that would be like a curvature of infinity at that point. Mm-hmm. And that's really the only place the angles exist on a path, is where the curvature changes abruptly. Because those are the only angles that are not 180 degrees. Mm-hmm. So I just think that's kind of fascinating that infinitesimal calculus has given us a way to talk about the tangent of pretty much anything. Thank you, Newton and Leibniz.
Yes, that's fascinating. Now, earlier you were saying, before we got into the physics element, you were saying that the curvature is inversely proportional to the radius.
Yeah, and we can actually show that with the physics. So the centrifugal force that we feel when we're going around a circle is equal to the square of the angular velocity, which is basically radians of a radian is the angle that when a radius subtends. Mm-hmm. Is radians over time, right?
Yes.
So the acceleration that you feel going around a circle is omega, which is angular velocity, squared times r.
Yes.
Let's imagine that we are traveling at speed 1 around a circle, right?
Yes.
And can you explain what speed 1 means?
Sure, sure. Again, speed, velocity is the derivative of position. So it's the change in position over time.
Yeah, so if we're going at speed 1, it means we're going 1 unit of distance per 1 unit of time, or like 10 units of distance per 10 units of time. They're equal, right?
Yes.
So let's say we have a circle of radius of r, right? R distance units.
Okay.
What will the circumference of that circle be?
If it's r, the circumference would be 2 pi r.
All right, so since we're going 2 pi radians, right, which is a full circle, in 2 pi r time, that means that we're going 1 over r radians per second, mm-hmm. which means that omega is 1 over r. And so acceleration, we already said, is omega squared r, right?
Yes.
So omega is 1 over r. So what's 1 over r squared times r?
1 over r.
Yep. And since that means acceleration is equal to 1 over r. And so since acceleration is kind of what our curvature is, or at least, you know, the magnitude of acceleration is what our curvature is.
Yes.
That means that curvature is inversely proportional to r using this physical argument.
Yes. So when we explore creating a circle through acceleration, or rather moving at a constant speed in a circle, that is a form of acceleration. And we have shown that all continuous functions have an angle, quote unquote, of 180 degrees. And an angle is a way of measuring an abrupt change or relation. The reason why is because the tangent can be calculated using calculus. Now, with respect to circles and polygons, we said earlier, we talked about creating a shape that approximates a circle by continuing to add angles that are the same distance apart
Yeah, which was also just quick. Archimedes of Syracuse used that to calculate his values for pi.
Yes, where he made a both on the inside of a circle and on the outside of a circle. He made the outside of a circle. He kept adding angles, and the same as the inside. So they got closer and closer to approximating each other's shape.
And then he took the average of those two.
Yes,
and he got really close. Like he got like three digits, I believe.
Yes, exactly. So he kept adding angles to a polygon, and they ended up at a circle.
And the proof in Euclid that also uses this. By the way, that if you keep adding angles to the circle, I think it's a proof on. There's a few proofs that use that, like the proof that the volume of a cylinder is equal to the area of the circle times the height uses this, because you have like basically a triangular prism, yes, and you keep adding segments to it, and you inscribe and circumscribe it. And the thing that you do with that is that when it goes to infinity, you show that it can't be more or less than something.
So yeah, so through discussing derivatives and acceleration and physics, we have a roundabout way of discussing whether a circle with an infinite radius is in fact a straight line, and how you know, this is a different way of answering that question. So the answer would be it's made of infinite straight lines.
Either it's made of infinite straight lines, or it cannot be defined, as in, you know, traditional Euclidean stuff, or it is a line because it's parameterized as an infinite circle. Like, you can imagine it, like, you know, when you get those audio bugs where you just go like,
yes,
and it's kind of like that, basically.
Yes,
we're you know, like when you hold, I'm not sure if you did this as a kid, but like if you ever had one of those fans that goes back and forth, if you hold it in place, it clicks and squeaks, and probably it's not good for the fan.
Yes,
we're doing that for the circle.
Pretty much, yes. And the other thing is, without getting into the rigorous mathematics, but just talking about definition, I prefer to say that it's a meaningless idea to discuss a circle with a radius of infinity. I prefer to, I don't want to say, you know, as my cop-out, as it were, but I prefer to say that question in of itself is meaningless.
And I think that my philosophical view on it is slightly similar and slightly different. My view is that it makes sense only to talk about the side of the circle that you can see if it's a straight line. The other side of the circle is meaningless to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, when we talk about infinitesimals, as soon as you bring infinity to the party, things get weird.
Oh yeah, and honestly, like the outline of like Daffy Duck could be considered a straight line if you made it big enough.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So
it is weird.
So I was thrilled to do this problems episode because we both get into some rigorous mathematics, but we also, you know, and I honestly think more importantly, arguably, I introduced the idea of doing an open-ended Socratic seminar discussion with kids in middle school and see where the conversation goes.
Yeah, ideas are born of discussion. And if you teach your students how to respond to new information or contradictory information by processing it in front of them, you can do them a great service. It's critical thinking. It's all this good stuff. So, Gabriel's suggestion is amazing.
Thank you. And it wasn't my idea, but I got to witness it.
Gabriel came up with his idea. Socrates was a myth.
Oh, gosh. All right. Until next time.
I'm Sophia.
And I'm Gabriel.
And this has been a Breaking Math Problem episode. Email us at breakingmathpodcast@gmail.com and contribute to our Patreon at patreon.com/breakingmath.